This is In Focus, the weekly public affairs program from KTBB and the Team Sports Radio, featuring members of the local community working to make East Texas a better place.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of In Focus. I'm Roger Gray. Good to have you with us. And we're going to be spending some time talking about an organization that hopefully you'll never have to deal with, to be quite honest. The Children's Advocacy Center of Smith County. Lexington Fowler's with us. She's Communications Director. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Good to have you here.
To be here and share a little bit about the Children's Advocacy Center. Yeah. We call it the CAC for short.
Okay. This is, sadly, I am originally from Houston and did a lot of stories with the child welfare agency there. It always struck me that the CAC is, it's almost like you pull everything together for a child in trouble, in need, a child of abuse, a child who has witnessed something tragic, something awful, wherein, yes, you can get them out of the house, or you can get the police involved, or you can get a doctor involved or a psychologist involved. You guys put that all together, don't you?
Yes. So the CAC serves as the hub for all sorts of different agencies, from law enforcement to medical services to our therapy team that's in-house. And truly what it's doing is bringing all of these different agencies and pieces together that need to be in place for a child to find justice and find healing under one roof. And so we call ourselves the hub, but we have really incredible partner agencies and teammates really in the process of getting these kids the hope and the help that they need.
Let's talk about the kids. What are the situations that can really interfere with the child's upbringing that you guys have to deal with?
So the cases that we see have to do with physical or sexual abuse, trafficking, neglect, or a child who has witnessed a violent crime. So maybe it's domestic violence, or they've been in an environment that is unsafe and they've seen something. We see all sorts of different outcries for these types of victims.
Gosh, I had a good friend who's head of the Children's Child Protective Services in Houston. She told me once during a break in our interview that she'd been at it for a long time. She said, I cannot look at another beaten child. I just can't. It has to be sometimes a little rough on the caseworkers, considering what you deal with.
We truly have superheroes in-house, and the reality is that abuse is everywhere. These children are victims, and somebody needs to step in, and somebody needs to say, enough is enough. This is not going to happen in our community. One in four girls and one in six boys are going to be sexually abused by the time they're 18. And so, really, our staff members are just people that are saying, we're unwilling to turn a blind eye to this. Somebody needs to step in, and it's going to be me.
I don't want to skip over that. Those are astonishing numbers. Can you give me that again? One in four girls?
One in four girls and one in six boys will be sexually abused before their 18th birthday. So that's not including the rest of the services that we provide for kids who have been in other traumatic situations.
Yeah.
It is a devastating number. At the CAC alone this past year, we had 1,108 kids come in for very first time, for their first services. And so we are fielding these situations left and right. But while it is kind of astonishing to hear how many kids are coming to our center, that means one less kid that's having to suffer in silence.
Right. But as astonishing as those numbers are, those are the ones you know about.
Yeah. The reality is that most people are not going to disclose abuse until the age of 56.
Oh.
It's horrible.
Yeah. It's a deep, dark secret you keep for whatever reasons you have, whether it's embarrassment or shame or whatever. And I'm guessing particularly in a case like that, it's tough to get a kid to come forward.
It really is, because 97% of these kids know their abuser. We talk a lot about stranger danger, but the reality is that most of the time they are people that are trusted by the families and by the children. And so when you bring in that relational dynamic, it makes it even harder for a kid to be able to disclose the abuse that's happening to them, because it's somebody that everybody seems to love and to know. And
they may even care about.
Absolutely.
But this, particularly if the child is very, very young, I'm guessing. This seems strange. This doesn't seem like, you know, Uncle Lou, whatever. Are they sometimes not even aware that this isn't right.
Yes. We have a community education team that their whole goal is to go out and teach children in schools and in different youth organizations what is appropriate and what is inappropriate in all sorts of interactions with people. Not just looking at the physicality of things, but where do you get to say no? And what is appropriate and inappropriate touch? What are appropriate and inappropriate interactions? Even to the point of telling them, surprises are awesome. Surprises are a really fun thing, but they eventually come to an end. If somebody's asking you to keep a secret about something and they say, if you tell somebody, this will lead to hurt, that is not an okay thing. And so we have these community educators that are going out into Tyler and out into Smith County to make kids aware of the very thing that might be happening to them and giving them space to say, this is me. This is my story. I didn't know that this was wrong. I just felt weird about it, or I thought it was okay. Whatever the circumstances, somebody is shedding light on the fact that the reality of their situation is that they're a vulnerable child being put in an inappropriate situation.
Are your educators that are out in the community, are they pretty much welcomed by everybody, schools, churches, et cetera?
We get to go into a lot of different environments. So they have been to the Caldwell Zoo. They've gone to a lot of schools. We're starting to build our relationships with churches and private schools in the area. It just is a matter of people realizing abuse can happen anywhere. None of us are in environments that are exempt from that. And a big part of their job is bridging that gap of understanding, bringing protection to every single environment in our community where kids are served.
I once had a friend who was suffering spousal abuse, and she made an interesting statement to me. She said, you drive down the street and you look at all those houses, you have no idea what's going on inside.
Yes, that is so true.
For better or worse.
So true.
Yeah.
Abuse is not defined or limited to a specific socioeconomic status, a certain location, a race. It is, unfortunately, everywhere, and it's predominant. But that is why we exist, to not only fight and help respond to these situations when kids are in need, but to stop it before it even begins. A huge part of what we're doing is trying to get prevention efforts out into the community so that people are aware of the realities of it and know how to combat it from the start, almost an upstream solution.
Right. And obviously, we've been sort of focusing at the beginning here on sexual abuse, but it can be physical abuse, or it can be spousal abuse that the child has witnessed, for example.
Yes. There are not really limits to the children that we serve. And so we see all sorts of different cases within a week span of time. Coming back from spring break, you see new cases that come in, and it really is sombering to think about all of these different elements, but to watch not only the CAC staff members, but our partner agencies rally around all of these cases, and they meet in our MDT, which is a multidisciplinary team, meeting every single Wednesday to cover all of our cases. And they are looking at how they can tailor their efforts to the needs of that child in the trauma that they've faced. So it's not a one-size-fits-all Band-Aid on this problem either.
And when I said early on that you guys sort of gather all the resources in one place, let's talk about that. Who is involved in any given situation, legally, medically, psychologically, et cetera?
So a lot of times what happens is a child will disclose abuse to someone, and they will come into the center for a forensic interview, which is the safe environment and setting for someone to ask them to tell their story. And while this child is telling their story, the heart of it is that they only have to share it once to reduce the amount of traumatization that comes from reliving horrible experiences.
Right.
And so before a CAC existed, what would happen is a child would have to go tell a teacher, and then from there the teacher would tell a police officer, so the child would have to recount it to a police officer and then to a medical team member, and then on and on and on, and all of these different agencies who need the information to serve the kid have asked this child to relive that experience over and over. So what happens when they tell it in the forensic interview room instead is that they just have to share it one time. And then law enforcement and our CPS teams and whoever else needs to be hearing that can sit in an observation room and listen from what is happening in real time as the child is sharing their story,
right.
But it protects that kid from reliving it.
And I'm guessing with the input of all of those entities, the person doing the forensic interview understands what law enforcement's going to need to know.
Yes.
What the psychologist is going to need to know, what the medical doctor is going to need to know.
Absolutely. And with that,
so you know what questions to ask.
Right. And imagine telling your story and you've shared this really crucial part of something that's been happening to you, mm-hmm. and somebody hears that and they say, got it, but then you're being forced to retell it again. Mm-hmm. In your brain, in my brain, I would say, oh, well, I guess I didn't say it right the first time necessarily, and so I might switch the story a little bit, mm-hmm. to try to fit and answer what these adults are asking me to do. And mm-hmm. so this also helps streamline the process where they are all receiving the exact same story. And that is a really important factor of the legal system, right. and what needs to happen in that process.
Because, sad to say, a really sharp attorney will poke holes in any mm-hmm. accusation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that is kind of step one for a lot of our clients.
Attorneys, some of my best friends. Yeah.
They are wonderful people. So forensic interviews are a lot of times the very first step for a child to enter the CAC. It's not always the route that they take to come to us, mm-hmm. But it is a frequent one. And so from there, they are seen by our medical team, mm-hmm. who are, again, superheroes. They provide wellness exams. They provide general checkups. Sometimes mm-hmm. kids have never seen a physician. And so for them to be able to come and get the exams that they need for their specific situation on mm-hmm. top of general health care is a critical part of making sure they have well-rounded healing experience.
Right.
And so there's follow-up appointments with that and testing and all the things that need to happen. But again, it's in this safe environment where mm-hmm. they're not being rushed through the system and they're not on a strict timeline. And so if it takes them all day to sit and walk through, our nurse is incredible, and mm-hmm. she takes the time to sit with the child to give them autonomy and independence and give them ownership over what's happening in that room so that they feel safe and secure within a medical process.
Yeah, it sounds so incredibly comprehensive. You know, we've all seen in the movies, Show Me on the Doll Where You Were Touched and so forth, which is a overly simplistic version of what you guys do.
There's so much more that goes on than that, and we know how media can construe things, so
movies have to do it quickly,
right?
And you're, in some cases I'm no doubt positive that you're dealing with physical injuries.
Yes, a lot
that
of
have to be dealt with as well.
Reality. It unfortunately is.
Yeah. Whether those injuries are physical from a beating or from a sexual assault.
Mm-hmm.
And the consequences of that. Yeah.
Yeah. So truly tending to the child physically and getting their legal case started. So that is our forensic interviews and our medical team. And then our third floor hosts our therapy team. And mm-hmm. they use so many different modalities of therapy to ensure that they have a tailored experience to care for the child's mental well-being and mental health and be a part of the healing mm-hmm. journey for them as well. And the most beautiful part about all of that, in my opinion, is that our services for clients are 0 through 17. That is who we see at the child mm-hmm. Children's Advocacy Center and adults with disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have been a client of the CAC, you are a client for life. And so if there is a trigger that comes up mm-hmm. later in life that reminds you of the trauma that you faced as a kid, mm-hmm. you can always come back to us and receive
really?
Services. Yes.
Okay. You mentioned it, so let's move on to that aspect of it. All right, you have a child. This child has suffered sexual or physical assault or something like that. What's the next step legally? What can be done? Because no doubt you're going to have the family member or the friend, whatever, there's going to be denial. No, that didn't happen. They're making it up, et cetera, et cetera. So now you have to move into the legal realm. What happens then? Legal and involving both the DA and the police.
Mm-hmm. So our cases come to us through CPS or through law enforcement. Mm-hmm. We have law enforcement in-house that are foundational to the work that we're doing. Mm-hmm. And so because those are already a legal filing, mm-hmm. that case starts to take its route. And that's okay. when everybody else jumps into.
And so they start gathering the information that they need, et cetera. Is there, and I'm certain there probably is, at a certain point with some children, is there now maybe a reluctance? I mentioned fictional Uncle Lou. I don't want to get him in trouble and so forth. Maybe let's just forget the whole thing. I mean, do you run into that? A change of heart, not wanting to hurt a friend or a family member, et cetera.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we are relational creatures, mm-hmm. and these are oftentimes very close relationships, like we talked about earlier, mm-hmm. that are the ones inflicting this pain. And so on top of that, you are being asked to disclose something that has been a very vulnerable situation for mm-hmm. you. And so, of course, there's going to be reluctance of
sure.
not wanting to disclose something that has brought a lot of pain or shame. And so that is a huge part of what our family advocates do, is walking with the child and with their family every step of the way through this process. Mm-hmm. And I actually just put out our annual report for 2024. And in it, we feature a story from one of our therapy clients. We'll call him Levi, mm-hmm. fictional name for privacy's sake. But he faced abuse as a child. As a six-year-old, he was put in a really compromised situation. There was finally an outcry. The perpetrator ran away, and Levi was brought into the center and mm-hmm. did not want to tell his story because he was afraid of what would happen if he did and the perpetrator came back into his life. And so you're dealing with all sorts of complex...
I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, they may fear retribution. Yeah,
yeah. So there's so many complex issues that these children are having to think through and file through in their own minds. Mm-hmm. And so with Levi's case, that was as a child. And then he went into high school and started realizing that he was still experiencing a ton of the pain and a lot of the PTSD from his childhood experiences. Mm-hmm. And a friend encouraged him to reach back out to the CAC and to see his therapist there. And so then as a high schooler, he was able to get the help that he needed and have a safe place that he looked forward to going every single week where he could tell his story and find the courage to share it mm-hmm. within a really protected environment so that throughout the rest of his high school experience and adult life, he could flourish, he could thrive.
Yeah. So there is that downstream echo sometimes.
Yes. A lot of times.
Of the trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, you're a client for life.
Yep.
With the CAC.
Absolutely.
Is it hard? You talked about an outcry. Which is the modern term we use when the kid lets somebody know. How does it get to you guys, I guess is what I'm saying? Because I'm going to assume, well, I know because I've done stories on it. Sometimes it'll be just something that a teacher picks up, a friend picks up, maybe a family doctor picks up. Hey, how'd you get this bruise? That sort of thing.
Yes, so that is another huge part of what our community education team does, is they do recognizing and reporting training with adults. They mm-hmm. do mental health first aid. They do trauma-informed schools so that the adults in the environments where kids are know what to look for, know what abuse looks like, know the symptoms of it, mm-hmm. and a lot of times the responses to it, so that when a child comes into their room, instead of saying, "What's wrong with you?" and being frustrated with the child, they can mm-hmm. say, "Wait, what's happened to you?" And it flips the script where then this kid has a safe place to say, "Yes, somebody's been hurting me. I've been hurt." And so that is a massive part of what community education does as well, mm-hmm. is training our community and the trusted adults who, in Texas, we are all mandatory reporters. And so mm-hmm. that's not a specific career path that you take. Just by being 18 plus, you are a mandatory reporter.
Okay.
And so it's teaching our whole community what it looks like to stand and be the bridge for a kid to get to a place of healing.
And I guess sometimes it takes a little convincing of the child to, or maybe not, to open up.
To share their story? I guess so.
Yeah. I just wondered about the sort of the natural reluctance to not, I don't want to say this, it's something bad, I don't want to talk about it,
yeah,
that sort of thing.
I think that's where we get to have the privilege of being in the environments we're in, being trusted people for children, and being relentless to be present for them, of saying, I see that something's off here. I see that there are symptoms that I have been informed might mean that there's abuse happening. I'm going to keep showing up for you until you are ready to say something. And I'm going to keep fighting on your behalf to figure out the truth of this in a way where you are still protected, but not ever promising a child, oh, I won't share what you're telling me because we have to.
Right.
For their safety.
Well, as you said, we're all have to report. It's mandatory. Now you have to deal with the family situation. If the problems are within the family, if this is not a safe environment for the child, what happens then?
So we have a Rainbow Resource Room, and our family advocates help the family members that are protective caregivers find safe housing if they need to go somewhere else. I'm trying to figure out legally. Sorry, might need to cut this part, but
tell me what you can.
Okay. With family members, a lot of times we will. Sorry.
Okay, that's all right. It's all right. But there are remedies, I guess we should say.
Yes.
If the child needs to be somewhere else.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So we, with our Rainbow Resource Room, we are able to provide housing and emergency needs and emergency funds for the protective caregiver and for the victims and their siblings if they need to find a new place to stay in the meanwhile. But the goal is to do whatever is best for the child. And so that takes a different form in every case.
Yeah. And I no doubt you have run into every sort of Your experts have run into every sort of reaction there could be to this, anger, denial on the part of the perpetrator, that sort of thing, resentment, I'm going to hire a lawyer, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, surely. But really, our goal is just to care for the child. And that is where our partners step in and do incredible work on the legal side of things and find justice for the kid. Our main priority is caring predominantly for the kid.
And as far as dealing with any adverse reaction from the parent or the perpetrator, whoever it is, that's also where your legal help can step in and say no.
Absolutely.
That sort of thing, you know, whether it's the police or the DA's office or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they can help you deal with that anyway.
Yeah, it really does take a village, and it takes everybody doing their role for this case to be fully tended to.
Okay. Have you had, you mentioned Levi's case, and you mentioned you're a part of the family for life, this family, the Children's Advocacy Center. Have you had people come back years later and talk to you about the sort of, again, the bounce back, the thing that we hear about it with soldiers, et cetera? You know, they have the PTSD comes back or the thoughts come back, that kind of thing.
Yes, absolutely. Another part of what I've been looking at with putting this annual report together is the effectiveness of our therapy modalities. And what is incredible about the work that our therapists are doing is they're combining many types, many forms of therapy that will be tailored to that kid's need. And so out of the 110 assessments that we did on clients last year, they each got two assessments throughout the year. 86 of them came back with a reduced level of post-traumatic stress symptoms, which is a crazy high statistic. That's 87% of them. And so, I mean, we are seeing life change happen in real time through therapy, through cognitive behavioral therapies, through EMDR, eye movement. I'm butchering the name of it, but it's a phenomenal, crazy science-backed modality.
Okay.
Through family and child stress intervention modalities, we just are watching all of these pieces come together through play therapy, through music therapy, through art therapy, and really bring healing that will serve the child for the rest of their life and will help them find ways to cope and to turn the page from this chapter and walk in a new life.
Yeah. And all of this, to get to the pitch part, all of this requires help, requires community involvement, requires sponsors, requires money.
Yes.
And you were telling me on the phone, you have events coming up.
We do. So
the rest of the year.
April is nationally recognized as Child Abuse Prevention and Awareness Month. And so we are going all out this year to make sure that everybody in Smith County hears about it. So we have our Women of Courage lunch April 1st at the Green Acres Baptist Crosswalk Center. And then from there, we have so many events. That's kind of our kickoff. But April 12th, we are doing a Tyler Fire Department versus Tyler Police Department Battle of the Badges softball tournament.
Yeah.
Yes, it's going to be a good time. So,
and that's to benefit you guys?
Yes, it is.
Oh, okay.
So we'll have raffle tickets.
That's a big annual event, yeah.
It's a great time. We're excited to get to be the recipients of it. And it's fun to partner with them as they're in our office. And so we've dreamt up some really fun raffle items. They'll each have their own walkout song. It's a whole thing. So
okay.
I think the Home Run Derby starts at 1:30 on Saturday, April 12th at Faulkner Park.
Is this the cops and the firemen again?
Yes.
Okay.
And then the actual games will begin at 3. But there's stuff for everyone. We'll have Kona Ice out there and a sippin' soda cart. And that's a really exciting event.
I want to come watch the Home Run Derby.
You should.
That'll be fun.
I have no idea how it's going to play out, but it'll be a good time.
Okay.
And then we've also partnered with a lot of local businesses and shops to bring awareness all month long. So Moss Floral Shop is putting together this beautiful blue bouquet, which blue is the national color for child abuse awareness. And it includes a pinwheel, which is our symbol signifying hope and innocence that childhood should hold. And then also the cycle of love and support that leads to healing for a kid.
Yeah.
And so it's a really sweet image and they'll feature that in their bouquet. Crema is putting out a delicious coffee drink at both of their locations.
Okay.
So really, we have so many different...
You've covered the waterfront here. Yeah.
Anything you could want to do, the CAC is probably going to be part of it this month. So
okay.
We're very excited.
So this is a month to particularly, you know, attend one of the events, contribute. If you have a business, I'm guessing you welcome their sponsorship, obviously.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes, we have sponsorship opportunities all throughout the year as well. So it's not a just April thing. While we are really highlighting our efforts this month, it is an everyday showing up for these kids and for their families and for the well-being of our whole city to be safe, healthy, and happy and whole.
If you are that child, or if you know that child, or if you're a neighbor and you suspect something, how do they get in touch with you?
Call 911.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. There's also a hotline that all of this information is on our website at cacsmithcounty.org. So if you need the numbers to the emergency services or to the hotline, please head there and find out how you can get in touch with the people who can do something about this.
And whatever it is you suspect, your experts will find a way into that.
Yes, absolutely.
To begin some sort of process for the child.
Especially in partnership with our law enforcement.
What are the age brackets for your work?
So we serve 0 through 17. I've used the word kids a lot, so automatically an elementary age child is popping into my head, but we have seen 1-month-olds all the way up through high schoolers, and so it really is every single child in Smith County.
Lexington Fowler, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
I appreciate it, and I appreciate the work all of your your team does over there.
Thank you for spotlighting it today.
It is good to have you with us and good to have you guys listening in. And we will do this again next week. Go to ktbb.com and you'll find this show if you'd like to hear the information again or get it for the first time. Thank you much. Appreciate Thanks. It. We'll see you guys next week.
In Focus is a weekly public affairs program featuring members of the local community working to make East Texas a better place. In Focus is produced by KTBB and the Team Sports Radio. And we thank you for listening. Join us again next week.